I'm Scott, I'm an alcoholic, and my sobriety date is January 7th of 1972. It's with gratitude, a whole pile of gratitude, that I speak tonight. And I go to a 6:30 a.m. meeting in the mornings. It's a spiritual meeting. We just thank God that I'm sober today, and I need to remember the past, and that's where I work step 12 a lot. And I see two of my new guys the other day, and I have a friend, Brendan, that celebrated a year on Tuesday. And that's a big one. That first year is big. It's just absolutely huge. And after 30 or so, you kind of get used to not drinking. You still think about it, but I'm a firm believer in the 10-10-40 method of giving my talk. Our story is disclosed in a general way. What we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. And it's 10 minutes on what it was used to be like, 10 minutes on what happened, and 40 minutes on what it's like now. And I was thinking about that earlier, and I usually I mix them all up. So, and that's okay. It seems to work pretty well. I'm the youngest of 9 kids. There's a lot of alcoholism in our family. I have a sister who's been sober now for BNA for 37 years. And I have a brother that died of alcoholism. I was trying to remember when he died, and it was early 80s, I think. I don't remember the date or anything. Our father was an alcoholic. At least he drank a lot. You know, but anyway, I drank in high school a little bit. Had a few beers while bowling. Had a few beers while going to an outdoor movie. When I got out of the house, I went to work on construction. Had a few beers before lunch because the place we had lunch was a tavern on one side, a restaurant on the other, and rooms upstairs. And so I ate, drank, and slept in the same building. And I was 17 that summer. And that's when my drinking took a hold, got rooted pretty well. And I worked on the lake freighters for a couple of years. There are boats out in the Great Lakes. Worked out there for a couple of years. Learned to drink a lot quickly. Get back on board before the ship left, because they'd leave without you if you weren't on board when they left. And I was in and out of college, I think 5 different times. And I finally graduated from MATC about 1991 or 2, after a 1-year course, and after I'd been sober for a number of years. And so it's really interesting. All of us drinking, you know. If you're familiar with Platteville, I went to school in Platteville. I majored on 2nd Street and minored in East Dubuque. And 2nd Street, when I went to school in Platteville, 2nd Street had all the bars in town. We're on that one block of one street. And so I figured, learned real quick that when they closed, you go down to East Dubuque and finish off the evening. Never got an OWI. When I was driving and drinking, they would, unless you had an accident, you didn't get an OWI. So everybody was really, really careful. And when I was drinking down in Platteville, I thought getting married might help. So I did that. I pulled out my little address book and selected 3 of them, and one gal wrote back. And probably 8 months, maybe a year later, we got married, which was a dumb thing to do. We didn't know each other, and I was heavy into drinking. And we got married, and she left me the first time at about 6 weeks. And took a Greyhound bus from Platteville back to Sheboygan. And so I drove up there. She left me a note, and I drove up there and said, oh, I'm going to straighten up, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she came back, which was her mistake, and looking at our relationship then. And about 10 years and 3 kids later, I got up one Saturday morning with a god-awful hangover, and she was standing in the living room with three little kids at her side and tears in her eyes. Said, "You drunken SOB, get out of the house before I call the cops." I had no idea what the night before had done. None. I had a sore right hand. There was no comments about it, anything. And so I packed and left. And before I left, I tried to call places and rooming houses, and they were all full, because right after the first of the year, it's a busy time of year for these rooming houses with guys getting kicked out of the house and don't know what the hell they did to deserve it. And I was able to stay with our parish priest for a couple of days. He had a spare room. And he said, in that evening, we were sitting in his den, and he said, "You got a drinking problem." And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "What are you going to do about it?" And I said, "I don't know. I've tried to quit a lot of times." And he said, "Scotty, you might like Alcoholics Anonymous." That's all he said. He didn't call me a name drunk or blah, 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 go on about it. He just said, "You might like Alcoholics Anonymous." And so the next day I called him and went to my first meeting. And got my turn around the table, and I said, "I'm Scott, and I guess I got a drinking problem." And somebody said, "What happened?" And I said, "I don't remember." And everybody laughed. And I didn't think it was funny at all. This was serious stuff. I had no clue what I had done. And they said, "Well, try not to drink tonight. Come on back tomorrow. There's another meeting." So I was able to do that. Went back the next day, and there was some of the same people. And they said, "Try not to drink tonight. Come on back tomorrow. There's another meeting." My first meeting was on Saturday. My first meeting was on a Sunday. And on a Thursday night, one of my neighbors came into a meeting. And I thought, uh-oh, come in to check on me. And Roy came up to me after the meeting, and he said, "I'm going to be your sponsor." And I said, "What's that?" He said, "If you want to stay sober, Scotty, you'll do damn well what I tell you." He walked over to the literature rack, picked up a 12 Steps and 12 Traditions book, kind of slapped me across the gut, said, "You pay for it, you read it, and you and I are going to talk about it." And I paid for it, and I started to read it. I read some other pamphlets. One of them was 44 questions. And it's still in the rack downstairs, unless we need some more. But anyway, I read that pamphlet, and I thought, oh, man. I fit here, because it talked about, do you think about drinking when you're not in a tavern? Well, yeah, and once you have that first drink, do you know how many you're gonna have? No, I only had a couple of pitchers, and I just seemed to fit. I came into AA and I just seemed to fit. Same kind of jokes as they told in the taverns, and a little less swearing, but it's still off color. But there was just something about AA, and I started to feel better. And I was invited back home after a week, and what a relief that was. And our first year of my sobriety was really pretty good. My wife was going to Al-Anon and working a program, and I was going to AA and working the program, and the kids were behaving a lot better than I ever thought they did. And I was working the steps with Romy and his buddies, because it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a whole group to raise a beginner. And that's what happened to me. Romy had these bunch of buddies that he knew, and we just kind of hung around together and did things together, and it was really a nice group of people. It was a whole community of people. And what a blessing that was. What a blessing. And Romy insisted I work the steps, and step one said, "We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable." When you get kicked out of your own home and you lose your kids and your wife and your home and your self-respect, and you're just inside, you're absolutely empty. And you just I'll do anything. I'll just do anything to get rid of this. And I remember that so clearly. It's just, you know, that unmanageability, it doesn't quit. But that powerlessness over alcohol, it's just something that's so elusive about it. What I call a six beer high. You know, about the end of a six pack, you're starting to feel good and everybody else can go to hell and you're feeling, you know, like, hey, this is all right. You know, by 12 or 18, you kind of start to change your mind a little bit, especially the next morning. But I had no control over how much I drank. None. And I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I got hung up on that word. And the guy said, did you do dumb things when you're drinking you'd never do sober? And, oh, yeah. They just stood there and smiled at me. Didn't say a word. And I thought, oh, crap. You know, I'm screwed. What really happened was I was set free. I was set free. I don't have to worry about, you know, am I or am I not? I don't have to worry about why am I an alcoholic? Oh, I asked that question. I asked Romy that question, and why am I an alcoholic? And he said, you dumb shit, you drank too much. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I can go with that. You know, and it's just as plain as could be. You know, did you do dumb things when you were drinking you'd never do sober? Yeah. Embarrassing stuff. Randy just walked in. The dude abides. He will come into my story here pretty quick. He's back in my Platteville days. The second trip to Platteville after I sobered up. But worked the steps and my life is unmanageable. The steps says my life had become unmanageable. And yeah, it had, because once I took one drink, I didn't know how many I was going to have. And I didn't stop. I couldn't stop till they closed the tavern and shut the lights off and kicked me on out of there, you know. And I related a lot to what a lot of people said when the conversation went around the table. I related a lot to them. And they told me to focus on the similarities and not the opposites, the things I don't, you know, because some people have things happen to them that I never did, never wanted to. And hi, Kirsten. What a life. And the step two came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And you may have noticed I memorized the things. After a few years, you memorize them. And the guys told me to memorize the steps. He said, then no matter where you are, you've got them with you. And I was told the same thing about the third step prayer. To memorize that, and no matter where you are, you got it with you. And it's just so comforting. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Alcoholics Anonymous was a power greater than myself. And that was my higher power. I believed in God. But I wasn't quite sure whether he'd help me stay sober or not. I didn't know about that. But I haven't had a drink since my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. They told me, try not to drink tonight, come back tomorrow, there's another meeting. And they kept telling me that. And I can hear their voices in my head saying, try not to drink today, come back tomorrow, there's another meeting. And I'm still doing it. I go to about six meetings a week. Sometimes more, sometimes a couple less. But what a gift. And came to believe. We came to believe. It's a process that evolves over 4 to 5 years, I think, for me, to really say yes to step two. And it happened because my sponsor told me to look at step three real careful. And I had no problems. I'd screwed up my life so badly that I had no problem at all admitting that I was powerless over alcohol and my life is a mess. So maybe there is, you know, a higher power that can help me and make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him. I had taken religious instruction in three different churches and joined two of them. And one as a kid and the other one as an adult. And my kid's mom was an Episcopalian. And so I joined that church. It doesn't make much difference to me on a personal basis. And so I did that. And we did pretty well the first couple of years. And then it started to, first year, and then we started to go through marriage counseling. And after three sets of marriage counselors, it was unanimous that if we stayed married, I'd probably drink again. And I knew darn well that I could not do that. Back in 69, I think it was, that I thought I used to like to go hunting, and so I had a squirrel rifle, and in a drunken blackout, I loaded it and was going to shoot her. And she talked me out of it, thank God, and I sold the rifle the next day, and I've never owned a firearm since, and I won't. And it just scares the hell out of me, what alcohol does to me. And it just still makes me shiver. Another thing that gives me goosebumps is how much you guys and gals have helped me through the years. We went through a divorce. I moved from Sheboygan to Platteville. I got a job at UW Platteville, which is where I met Randy. And he was still having fun at the bars. And he was a programmer trainee, and I was a computer programmer for... I was a programmer for, what, 27 years, something like that? Yeah. But anyway, Randy was there, and he'd come in with a hell of a hangover, and I said, you know, Randy, there's an easier way to do this. Hey, I'm fine. It's the same thing I used to do. And I moved to Madison in 79, and for a job change. And I moved from Platteville, and by then Pam and I met at a Southern Wisconsin Area Assembly. I was a DCM, a district committee member from District 9 down in the Grant County, Iowa County area. And Pam was a DSR out of Monroe. And I knew the fellow from Monroe, and he introduced us, and the rest is history. Been married for 33 and a half years, almost a half, but what a wonderful time it's been. And it's one of the blessings of my life. Step three, when I moved to Platteville, I started going to meetings every day. Platteville was Monday night. Belmont was Tuesday night. Lancaster was Tuesday. Belmont was Wednesday. Thursday was either Dodgeville or Dubuque. Friday was Dubuque or Darlington. Saturday was either Dubuque or Dodgeville. And Sunday was always at Mercy Medical Center in Dubuque. And a lot happened in the meeting at Mercy on Sunday nights. One night I was whining. I was sitting in a meeting whining, and my sponsor was right next to me. It was old Joe. And I was whining. And Joe looks at me and says, "Shut up, Scotty." And I just, "You what?" You know, I didn't say anything. I just, my blood pressure was probably, I was as red as a sweater. He said, "I'm going to talk to you after the meeting out in front." And we got out in front after the meeting, and he said, "If you're going to go drinking, there's a tavern two blocks down the street. Hit the road. Just go on back drinking. Go finish your drinking." "I don't want to drink." He said, "All right, get to work." And I said, "Doing what?" And he said, "When you get home, you read step one out of the 12 of 12 and call me." So I did, and I called him, and he says, "What part of that don't you understand?" Mm-hmm. You know? And a lot of what he was trying to say is leave the past as the past and turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand Him and leave it there. You know, I'm not Pam's higher power and she's not mine. We're good friends. We're really good friends. And I've got a lot of good friends and Bryce and, you know, a lot of them. It's the third step. made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand it. Just how do you do that was my quandary. Because I had made the decision, but I had no clue of how to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood it. And Joe told me, memorize the third step prayer and say it at least once every day out loud. The third step prayer says, God, I offer myself to Thee. I'm going to give me to God that I don't understand. You know, I said, Joe, what's going to happen? He kind of grinned. He said, don't worry about it, Scotty. You haven't done such a damn good job by yourself, have you? Got a point, Joe. I have nothing to lose, everything to gain. You know, relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may be a witness to those I would help with Thy power and Thy love and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. I tried to look for a list of principles to practice in all of my affairs, like it says in step 12, but it also goes into a lot of other steps. And on page 99 of the 12 and 12, the prayer of St. Francis. And it's not up in this room, but in the meeting room downstairs, it's on the wall. And so it probably took me about 4 or 5 years to realize that that prayer is a list of principles. When somebody's in trouble, can I help them? If somebody's sad, may I, you know, be with them? And I can't quote it. And but that prayer is the list of principles for me. The third step prayer is my anchor. I see it at least once every day. If I'm having, quote, a bad day. Now, a bad day, the definition of that is things aren't going as I want them to. That's a bad day. Whether my wants are correct or not, but that's a bad day. So I'm having a little hissy fit. And I've gotten now so I realize it. And I have for a long time. And I'll go off with myself at the hardware store. It's out in the loading dock. I'll just go out there and stand a minute and say, hey, God, I offer myself to Thee to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. So relieve me of that bondage of self. And once I can do that, I am set free. It's honestly just a miracle. When you do that day after day after day, it's like fake it and you'll make it. In fact, I was talking to a young lady this morning. She's having a hard time in that area. And I said, fake it and you'll make it. And I said, here's a copy of the third step prayer. And you'll memorize it. And say it out loud. To me, if I think it, the other half of my brain is going off on its own tangent somewhere. You know, I've still got a committee meeting running up here. And you folks have to slow it down for me. You really, really do. You slow it way down. Moving on to step 4, you know, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself, of ourselves. And my first 4th step was of my wife and our marriage. And I shared that with another fellow, and he didn't say a derogatory word about it. But on the way home, I knew what I had done. It occurred, God sitting on your shoulder saying, hey, dummy, you know what you just did? You know, so I knew then that I was to do another one. And when I moved to Flatville, I went to a retreat at Cincinnati, which is a gorgeous place owned by the Catholic Church. And they had a retreat down there. And so I went and did a 4th step and a 5th on me. And I shared the 4th and the 5th. The 5th step says, you know, admitted to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of my wrongs. And when you go through and you talk about things, how we've screwed up in life, and the hurt we've given other people, and just all sorts of stuff, it puts it in a different light. It really comes home to roost. I did this, you know. And the answer is, yeah. And I had an awful time with step 6 and 7. Step 6 especially, it said, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Now I looked at it as getting all my defects of character in one, at one time, that I was ready to have them all removed. And I told that to the guy that I took my second fifth step with, and he said, never happens. He said, when you go through life, you will find one of your character traits that's raising its little ugly head. And he says, if you're sick and tired of it, ask God to remove it. Because I don't have the power to do it. I've got to quit doing stuff. But I don't have but it still sits back in here. And it's not until I became willing to have God remove them one at a time that, you know, it feels pretty good. And I keep working at it. Because I guess I'm not sure. I suppose at my funeral they'll all be gone. But a lot of them are gone. A lot of them have diminished in their strength and their prominence in my life. Most of them have. And in fact, I was sober, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 years. And I was talking to my boss and I said, what do I have to do to become promoted? And he kind of sat back in his chair and he said, oh, you're doing a great job here and blah, blah, blah. And he said, don't pour a lot of sunshine up my torch. And I said, what do I need to do? And he said, the only problem is you're doing really, really well in AA. And he said, I'm proud of you and we're all happy to have you with us. But he says, you're a little too honest. And I said, thank you. You made my day. And I walked out of his office. If I have to compromise honesty, I won't compromise. I just won't. It goes against everything that I have. If I see something, I'll tell somebody. I try very hard not to be brutally honest. You know, we in Alcoholics Anonymous, we can rip somebody apart. I learned that in the tavern, how to do that. You know, you just rip them apart, but I don't know how to put them back together. And during the period of time that I was moving from Platteville to Sheboygan to Platteville, before I moved, made the move, I spent 100 days in a psychiatric ward. Depression. Didn't know who the hell I was. Didn't know who I was going to be. I was just so confused. I spent 100 days in there. And I learned a lot. I learned a tremendous amount that I still use today. Like, who am I? I mentioned I thought I used to like to go hunting. You know, and that was one day the shrink asked me, he said, I want you to make a list of everything you like to do for fun. Okay, I can do that. So the next day I had swimming and hunting and fishing and skiing and blah, 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 blah. A whole list of stuff. He said, that's a nice list. Tomorrow I want you to write a paragraph on each one of those telling me what you like about it and what you don't like about it. I don't like to kill animals. I don't like to eat wild game. I sure as hell don't like to skin a squirrel. God, it takes you 10 squirrels to get a stew, you know? And, but it's, you know, and, but I like to go for a walk in the woods on a sunny afternoon. I don't like to go fishing. I don't like to clean them. What I like to watch is the bobber on the water. It's calming. I like to watch the shoreline. You know, I like to watch the clouds. I don't like to maintain a boat and a trailer and all the stuff I used to have. You know, and once went through the things that I thought I liked to do, and I found out why I like them and why I don't, and what a part of them. And that's been a very valuable tool in my life. And I feel free that I don't have to be a fisherman. You don't go fishing? No. No, really don't care to do that. Oh, okay. I've got a workshop in my basement that it's a comfortable little place to be, you know. And I make things that are round and creates a lot of dust and stuff. And one day I came home and it's a hardware store and I asked Pammy, I said, do you think I should get a dust collector? Oh, that'd be a good idea. You know, and the fellow that stopped in, it had one for sale, a good one for sale, and that'd be a good idea. So we have a dust collector now that takes care of a lot of that problem. Doesn't take care of all of it. But anyway, getting off the track here pretty well. But it never was much for tracts. There was something in the reading today that I got related to the whole thing this morning about being told what to do. And there's some hair in the back of my neck just bristles. Since I was this big, I have 5 older sisters and 3 older brothers. And just bristles when somebody tells me what to do. I don't know. Yeah. Once upon occasion, I'll slip and tell Pam what to do, and she'll look around and laugh. You know, God bless her heart. And I try not to do that. But anyway, I do the "what do you think if" questions. But those work. Then she'll tell me. And that's why we get along. And there's a lot to learn, and it's been a wonderful road. Getting rid of our character defects and changing our lives when you get into Alcoholics Anonymous is a process, and it takes weeks, months, and years. You know, Brendan and Tim are both pretty new, and Romy and his buddies told me, "Hang on to your ass. You're going for a hell of a ride." But it's a fun ride. You know, once you get through the first couple of months, it's a fun ride. Things have happened. Pam and I have stuff happen to us that you couldn't plan. You know, one of them was that we were on a trip to the 1985 International Conference in Montreal. And we stopped at Niagara Falls. And we'd never been there before. Looking for a place to park to go walk down the sidewalk. We pulled into a parking lot. And the guy said, "And this is 1985. The guy said, "It's $7 for parking." I said, "Well, that's pretty steep." And he said, "Well, I'll give you a ticket and you get that off at the restroom." "Well, what restroom?" "Well, there's a restroom in the building here." So we go walking around. We paid it. We went walking around the area and having fun and time for supper. We went into the restroom. And they seated us in an area outside of the restaurant overlooking Niagara Falls. Now, the thing had a restaurant that was kind of a square, but we were right on a point. There's nobody in front of us. In fact, we could feel a light mist coming in. We couldn't plan that. You know, there's things like that keep happening to us. Just, you know, wherever we land, we find something. You just go to the internationals. The next internationals in 2015. They're every 5 years. There are pictures down in the meeting rooms down here of the big meeting on Friday night, and a couple of them are missing. But those are the international conference, International AA Convention pictures, and you won't see any faces. And we have one of them from New Orleans. We took our honeymoon in New Orleans, 1980 International Conference. And I memorized where we were, and I can spot it. And I have white hair, and Pam's got the brown hair. She hasn't turned gray at all. It's amazing. And so it's. But anyway, step 6 and 7 are. They set me free from myself. All the steps set me free from who I used to be, a real jerk. And that's putting it very politely. Get into step 8 and 9, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. There's that willingness again. Willingness is in everything we do. It's in our whole persona. If I'm willing not to stop at Monkey Shines on the way home tonight, I'll probably get home tonight and I will have a home to go to. But if I stop there, all bets are off. So I don't think I will. I like our home. You know, and it is a choice. If things aren't going well at work and I start feeling sorry for myself, it just means that things aren't going as I would want them to. Maybe things are going as they're supposed to. I don't know, but I'm not to judge. I've turned that over in step 3. God's the judge. I don't understand God. I like the acronym Good Orderly Direction for God. You know, throughout the centuries, all societies have had their higher power, their own gods. And who am I to try to define one? You know, I'm just here on a visit for, I don't know, 80, 90 years, something like that. Whatever comes up. If it wasn't for the medical community, the cardiologist at Mary, I'd have been dead in 1989. I think it was my first heart attack. So I'm on borrowed time. This is free. You know, by the grace of God. And if I hadn't stopped drinking, I would have been dead by now. Made a list of persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. We made the list when we were in step four. We wrote down a list. And one of the great things about Alcoholics Anonymous is you keep doing the fourth step. I know people that have been sober for years that do a fourth step every year. I think that's a little overkill, but that's not me. We're all our own individuals. We can do what we pretty well please. And step nine, made direct amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. You don't go to the neighbor and tell him I had a good time smooching with his wife while he was passed out drunk. You know, you just don't do that. Having grown up in the Kickapoo Valley, I learned that you don't hit a hornet's nest with a stick. You just don't. It's really dumb. You know, it's really dumb for me to go drinking because I change. Something happens in my brain. My body does not process alcohol like somebody else's. I don't know many people that don't have that affliction, but there are a few of them running around, I suppose, that can have one or two drinks and quit. And I, you know, never hung with those people. They didn't drink enough. They didn't know how to drink. What the hell would I want to hang around with them for? You know, they were party poopers. And but step nine is another step that is freeing. They talk about cleaning off my side of the street. Don't plan on any given response from whoever you're making an amend to. Case in point, my father-in-law. My last night drinking, I misbehaved pretty badly at the Elks Club in Sheboygan after getting drunk, totally drunk. And my in-laws were there, and my wife, and they moved the party to their house, to my in-law's house. And I was showing one of the ladies his greenhouse, which was about, I suppose, 7 feet wide and 12 feet long, something like that. And I apparently made a pass at her, and my arm came down through the glass shelves and the gloxinias, and this is in January. Gloxinias were in full bloom, landed upside down on top of little baby geraniums that he was growing. And he got a little irritated with me and started mouthing off, because he had a few also. So instead of hitting him, I put my fist through his living room wall. And didn't even know it the next morning. Had no clue. I don't ever want to do that kind of crap again. And this is after 10 years of being a real jerk of a son-in-law. Yeah, we had some good times, but not many. And I don't ever want to do that again. I never want to go back to being that kind of person. And that's why I go to meetings. Because the people that I know that are sober and happy go to a lot of meetings. And they told me that Romy and his buddies told me to go to a meeting every day that I drank. Yeah. Hidey-ho. 5-6 days a week. I didn't drink every day. I was a binge drinker, really. You know, nothing worse than a 2-beer hangover. You know, it's just, you know, my God, it isn't even worth it. Yeah, you got to earn it. I don't mind a hangover when I've gotten good and drunk. But, you know, yes, I minded it. Wake up in the morning, your tongue's asleep and your teeth itch. And it just, God, it's terrible. And head hurts. But I worked at a dairy for a while, and I found out that milk chocolate in the morning, if you keep it down, that the headache, that the stomach calms down, cools down, and the headache goes away. And I found out later that milk chocolate has free sugar in it, and that's why the headache went away. And I thought that was interesting. But I didn't drink much longer than that. Well, a couple of years, I guess, after that. Getting on to step 10, Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Does anybody here like to admit when they're wrong? Nope. But it's one of the best things we can do for ourselves is admit when I'm wrong. Yeah, I made a mistake. I apologize. That's all it takes. You don't have to rehash everything because the other person knows what you did. I was wrong. I apologize. And I'll try not to do it again. And alcohol has set me free from a lot of personal baggage that I was dragging around behind me. Just dragging it on a rope, you know. Take all my troubles, drag it on the rope. Woe is me, poor me, poor me, pour me another drink. That's where it gets you, time after time. Go back a few, the beginning of the week that I sobered up, there were four of us young guys in Sheboygan in our early 30s that sobered up together, same week. And our sponsors all knew each other, of course. And we got to know each other really well. And our sponsors made us go to beginner's meetings for 6 months in a row. And they were every Monday night were beginner's meetings. And they said, you will do this. And all four of us are still sober. Bart whipped out a couple of years ago. And he died. He got sick of something. I don't remember what it was. But Rod and Bob L. Jr. and I are still sober and doing well. We're all retired. But it's amazing what those beginners meetings do. They teach us what Alcoholics Anonymous is and what it is not. And they go through the 12 steps over and over and over and over and over again. And guess what I'll be doing tomorrow morning at 7:30? Co-leader of a beginner's meeting right here in this room. And I'm going over and over and over. And it's my payback for my sobriety today. It's helping newcomers. And it doesn't take much. It just takes a little bit. It takes me passing on the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to the newcomer, to the new guy. Like Romy and Lenny and those guys helped me when I was sober enough. And it takes a long time. You know, I remember my fifth anniversary. I was so proud of myself. There were 5 years, man. And Joe says, well, all that means is you're not a newcomer anymore. And it's pretty damn true. It's pretty true. I still learn it. There's stuff, and I sit in those beginners meetings, we use the Back to Basic book because it's so well written and it quotes the big book a lot. And I read things in there that, oh yeah, that's right. I've forgotten that. See, I'm a slow learner and a fast forgetter. And I find that pretty common among us. But I'm a slow learner and a fast forgetter, and I just need repetition. I need repetition. On step 10, continue to take personal inventory. That's their repetition. We do it every day. And after a while, and I don't know when it happened, but all of a sudden I began to realize when I had just said something that I should not have said. And a sponsor like Joe, who nailed my butt whenever he felt the urge, a sponsor like him, I began to learn to stop, apologize, right in the middle of a sentence. And he said, plus that, if you don't realize that you screwed up until later, if you smarted off to somebody in front of other people, you need to apologize to that person in front of other people. Oh, crap. He said, do it. It's good for you. And I think he's right. And I try to do that. You know, none of us ever hit 100%. It says in the first part of chapter 5 that Pam read before this meeting, we don't strive for perfection, we're just striving for growth. And that's pretty true. We're just working for growth here. That's all. And I don't want to be perfect. Especially to think I'm perfect. God, that'd be terrible. Continue in promptly. Promptly is whenever you realize it or remember it. And step 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Joe told me, he said, you don't go to God with a shopping list, you just report for duty. What that means to me is that in my prayers, in my other life, God, please help Pammy with this problem, and my sister Trishy with this, and my sister Nancy with that, and please give my neighbor this or that. I don't need, who the hell am I going to make up a shopping list for other people? I don't know what God's plans are for them. You know, I'm just trying to save my own butt and try to keep it out of trouble, you know. And so Joe was pretty right on that. Don't go to God with a shopping list, just report for duty. Says that in the third step prayer. God, relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulty, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power and thy love and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. And I just need to always do that. I need to try to do that. And part of who I have become. I work at Dorn Hardware over here part-time. A year or so ago, a lady, I was over a couple aisles from the cashier, and I heard a lady come in the door and say, I'm looking for somebody. And the cashier said, who? And she said, I don't know. He's a happy guy. And the cashier said, oh, you're looking for Scotty. I mean, that's what you folks have done for me. That's what you folks, the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, have done for me. Have helped me to be happy. And my morning prayers in the morning, God, please forgive me of my sins and my screw-ups and help me to forgive myself and help me to be a happy person today. Leave the past in the past. Leave their problems to them and I'll deal with my own. You know, if I can help somebody, fine. But if I, you know, I don't need to go looking for trouble. And I'm not the judge. I just kind of sit back and relax and enjoy the birds on the bird feeder and enjoy Fanny. You know, it's funny. I'll be sitting on the couch, and she just quit working this week. But when she'd come home at 5 o'clock, I'd see her pulling in the driveway, and I'd get goosebumps. That's just, I don't know, just part of me, I guess. You know, a lady that I love. And you folks have given me that. And a lot of it has to do, not a lot of it, most all of it has to do with what you guys have taught me in the 12 steps. Sought through prayer and meditation. It's a daily job. We have a daily reprieve based on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. That's a quote from the Big Book. And the older I get and the longer I'm sober, the more true that is. I'm just sober today by the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys, gals, have given me a life that I could have never dreamed of when I was drinking. And a lot of that is an inner freedom. I was sober about, I don't know, 15, 16 years, something like that. And I was talking to two of the old guys, Wayne Wacker and Bill Breitenbach. And they're both dead now. And I said, you know, it seems like you change a lot between 10 and 20. And almost in unison, they said, oh, yeah. And it's all spiritual. It's inside that the changes are. It isn't buying a new car or anything else. Step 12, step 11, yeah, you don't go to God with a shopping list, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us, and the power to carry that out. And it's in step 11, in the 12 and 12, on page 99, I mentioned the prayer of St. Francis, it's in there in the 12 Steps and Traditions book. And it's in there on page 99, and in the older version it's in page 100. But, step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. List of principles is in that prayer on page 99. I used to look for the list of principles, and I couldn't find them in the Big Book. Until I saw that prayer, all of a sudden it clicked. This is who to be. I wish I don't have a 12 and 12 here, but refer to your own copy. It's on page 99. And it gives you the list of principles of who to be, how to help other people, and to be gentle and not a noisy jerk. You know, I try to be gentle with the people I sponsor. Gentle but firm. You know, call them on their crap if they have any. You know, having had a spiritual awakening, one of those spiritual awakenings is that I'm not responsible for the sobriety of people I sponsor. I'm not responsible if they go back drinking. I'm not responsible if they stay sober and live a happy life ever after. All my job is, as a sponsor, is to present the 12 steps to them as a toolbox. When you come into a hardware store, I need a bunch of wrenches, I'll give you a whole bunch of tools. It's the same deal. If you call me at 2 in the morning and chat, you bet. Yeah. If you've got my phone number, welcome to call. Anytime. I'll get up and we'll chat with you for a while. Call back in bed and say, thank God that's not me today. Yeah. But it has been. Yeah. It has been. I know a couple of times that I've stayed sober in the first 10 years of my sobriety when I was ready to go back drinking. Life was not good. Which means it doesn't go as the way I wanted it to go. You know, poor me. You know, a little 5-year-old boy stomping his feet and screaming. Right here. You know. And, but what you guys have given me is just unbelievable. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, it means all of them. You don't do all of them, you're missing the piece. The freedom that I get, that I have, inside, is just unbelievable. And it's because of you folks and these 12 steps and my truly belief in God. We have a 7:30 a.m. meeting. We read out of the 24-hour-a-day book. And it uses the word God a lot. Do I understand God? Nope. Do I know what God wants me to do? I know what God does not want me to do. I've never heard God speak to me, you know, directly. But when I sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, listen to you guys and gals share your stories, I get energized. I know what God wants me to be. You know, and it's just, it is such a relief and so exciting that I have a hard time talking about it. Because I can't explain it, you know. If I were somebody like Longfellow or one of the poets, I might be able to sit down for a year or two and come up with a poem about it, but it's just it's the life that we have today and the freedom and the love and the friendship. It's just something we share that is so special that it's unbelievable. I had a heart attack in 1989, right at the end of my term as a Southern Wisconsin area chairman for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was laying in the hospital, and that hospital room looked like a flower shop or a card shop. It was unbelievable. It was humbling. I don't know who it was, but somebody heard a couple of nurses out in the hall saying, who is this guy? Because the stuff came in from all over. And that's from going to meetings and staying clean and sober and helping other people. And they didn't know that the guy laying in the bed, me, was an alcoholic. You know? And that's how I knew you people. And they had no idea. But what a gift. And the other yesterday I had a doctor's appointment just to go to him for a checkup and stuff. He said, how you doing? And I handed him my 42-year coin. And he said, good for you. He said, I wish I had more patients like you. And I told him, I said, if you have somebody that wants some help, I said, feel free to give them my phone number. And life changes. And I guess I'm running out of stuff to say. Thank you all. Thank you, each and every one of you. Bryce, and Brian, Emmy, all you people. And hundreds of others. Thanks for my life today. Thanks.